This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
Here's another Saturday Magazine podcast brought to you by Joy sponsor, Virgin Australia. Visit virginaustralia.com.
Across Melbourne on Joy 94.9 and streaming online at joy.org.au, you're listening to Saturday Magazine, every Saturday, 10 till 12.
We've got Tony on the phone. Good morning, Tony, and sorry for the getting on a bit later than you thought.
No, good morning. It's no problem at all. These things happen.
They do.
They do.
Now, talking about things that happen, a few weeks ago we had thunderstorm asthma. Is there actually a medical term for it? Or is thunderstorm asthma what we have to go with?
Well, it's certainly what's now in the literature. I think it's certainly the term now being used. So I don't think up until these sort of events it's probably had a particular term. But in essence, it's just the pollens in the atmosphere causing significant amounts of asthma across a number of people across the community.
Now, we saw, you know, some tragic results of that. And, you know, our hearts go out to the families and friends of those people who lost their lives as a result of it. In terms of Ambulance Victoria, Tony, I know, you know, this was a huge huge issue for Ambulance Victoria in responding to it. You know, you were messaging paramedics that were off shift or on leave, you know, to ask them to come in. You know, you were drawing resources from all over the state to cope with it, as was our hospital system. What are the learnings from that, you know, on the basis that this is probably going to happen again at some time? What are the learnings from that? How is Ambulance Victoria going to deal with this next time?
Well, there's probably a few learnings straight up. I share your comments about the loss of lives, and our thoughts are obviously with those families as well. We dealt with 1,900 cases, a full day's workload in a four-hour period. And at one point during the event, we had a 000 call coming in every 4.5 seconds. So I think from our perspective, the learnings for us were that as a health system, an ambulance and the hospitals, we've demonstrated a capacity to respond to an unpredicted event. But I think the key things we're looking at the moment and that we're learning will be, you know, the community have made it quite clear they wanted to hear from us. If we couldn't get to them quickly, they wanted us to tell them that. And I think that's certainly something we're already putting in place to, if we have these sort of situations again, we can actually let the community know that an ambulance, we can't give a time for an ambulance in these circumstances, and they may choose to make their own decisions about making their own way to hospital. I think the other thing for us out of this is around public messaging, and I know the Chief Health Officer and the Department of Health and Human Services are looking at this as well. How can we communicate what's going on to the workforce? We've never had a situation where we've not been in a position to be able to respond in a timely fashion to these number of cases. And again, communicating that through social media and other mechanisms to the community so they're aware of it's also another important learning for us. So lots of other things throughout it, but I was amazed by the way our workforce came together. It was phenomenal. The things they did on that night are amazing. And then there were many, many lives saved as a result of the great work of our paramedics, the support staff, and by the hospital system itself.
Tony, this is clearly not going to be an isolated incident. As much as it was a freak incident, we're going to see it happen more because of the higher rates of almost invisible pollens through grasses and various things because of a reasonably wet winter in our state's west and further into the eastern side of South Australia. What's been done since that event to start to think about how we can be better prepared so that there's possibly less loss of life and your organisation and certainly the broader health service can respond more quickly?
So that's an interesting question. I think if you look at heat a few years ago, you know, we never saw issues around heat wave and And we've seen a number of those over the years, and we're very good now at predicting them. We're very good at preparing and giving good community messaging to get the community able to prepare itself, and we're able to ramp up our responses to be able to respond quickly to those to the increased workload we know we see. I expect we'll see the same thing occurring here. I'm not sure yet whether this is a predictable event in the sense that we could say on this day it's going to happen. There are more others with much more expertise out there looking at this situation, but we can actually be able. We can look at the predictors or the things that may influence, such as high pollen, thunderstorms, etc. And the Sunday after the event, we actually prepare ourselves for thunderstorms and pollen, increased pollen. Now, thankfully, there were no issues, but we were taking advice from the Bureau of Meteorology, the Chief Health Officer, and preparing ourselves to be able to respond. And I think that's what we're going to see going forward: better predictability about the types of days where these things might happen, and we'll make sure we've got our emergency response capability ramped up to be able to deal with increased cases if that occurs.
So, did you have any notice, or did you expect that this was going to occur? Did you have any indicators at all?
None whatsoever. The first indication to us was that we were receiving this overwhelming increase in 000 calls. And our first thought was there was something wrong with the technology, because we'd never seen this volume come through. So we very quickly realised this was real. And then started escalating our emergency response plans to be able to respond our managers and other parts of the system. We responded our non-emergency patient transport providers, brought in extra cruisers, as was said before. And the event lasted at a peak of around about 3 or 4 hours. But as I said, at the peak of it, we were having a 000 call coming in every 4.5 seconds. And we're just working to prioritise as much as we could the sickest patients, giving people advice over the phone about what to do in the emergency through our secondary triage or referral service, and also responding our fire service colleagues to also assist us with our response as well. So we've developed these systems in response to other emergencies such as heat, but normally we can predict them coming and react to it. This was something that the first notification we had was the significant increase in 000 calls.
What an extraordinary event, Tony. And I offer you my congratulations for your organisation's ability to respond so spontaneously to what was massive. I have to say, there have been some criticisms of the government in particular about the way in which the government responded to this. And I've heard some of those criticisms by commentators, even in this very studio, actually. What do you have to say about that?
Well, I have to, from my perspective, the government reacted very quickly to this. I mean, they've announced the review through the Inspector General, which I think is really important to have this independent review of how the whole system responded on the night. So from my perspective, I certainly can't be critical of the government. I think the government have responded very quickly to this. The minister particularly has come out early in this situation and has offered whatever support is necessary for this going forward. So there will be absolutely learnings out of this, and I think we owe it to the families who have lost loved ones. From my perspective, I certainly couldn't be critical of the government. I've seen them respond very quickly to this, and in a way that they're genuinely wanting to make sure that we're learning from this, and we're well prepared if it happens again.
Great.
So that, I guess that leads me to my next question: what has been put in place from a funding point of view, or indeed a planning point of view, so that should this happen again, we can respond, or your service and indeed the broader health service can respond more efficiently and more effectively? Is there more funding that you've been able to access, or is there a different way that things can be done?
Well, it's interesting. I don't think from our perspective funding was a barrier at all on the night or would be into the future of this type of event. I think the really important things for us are being able to ideally be able to identify these events may be coming, so that preparedness. And importantly, being able to escalate very quickly and continue to escalate our resources in the community. So for us, the real learnings out of this will be about, as I mentioned earlier, community messaging, but also importantly, continuing to be able to escalate and use other resources in the community to help us better respond in the event it happens again. I'm hoping it won't, but it's happened once. I think we have to assume it will, and on that basis, we'll be absolutely prepared for these type of events going forward.
Just before we go, Tony, we've seen, recently the Victorian government has again is putting more money into Ambulance Victoria. I see regularly new ambulance stations being opened and renovated. more intake of paramedics. Over the next couple of years, or how many paramedics do we have? Do you have now on the road?
So we have around about 4,000 paramedics across the state, and with the announcement a few weeks back by the government, we'll be increasing that by about 10%. So we'll have an additional 450 paramedics being recruited over the next 3 years. It's a $500 million, half a billion dollar investment, the biggest ever investment into ambulance services, and is designed to basically improve the number of crews and stations in outlying parts of Melbourne, and parts of rural Victoria as well, and also provide us with quite a significant number of flexible paramedics so that we can match the workload to all our paramedics to the workload and demand that's out there. So a huge investment, and it's really about us working towards hitting the targets the community expect of us. But it's going to be busy for us the next few years, but an incredibly exciting time for us and the community.
Tony, before I let you go, I've had a bit of a brain fart, and I wanted to ask you... knowing that following the Black Saturday bushfires in particular, there was incident stuff put in place where text messaging and technology can be used to advise people that they are under threat. Mm-hmm. Does your organisation potentially have access to that piece of technology so that when something like what happened with the thunderstorm and the pollens and the asthma happens, that you can actually access that system to alert Victorians that there is a situation and that preventative medication and that sort of stuff should be taken and windows closed, that sort of thing? Is there a way to be able to use that technology to advise people in a sort of mass scale?
So you're spot on. It's something that's developed as a result of the Black Saturday bushfires, and which has been quite well developed through our Emergency Management Victoria team. That's something we're looking at right now with health about how we can access those messaging. Awesome. Obviously, public messaging is the role of the Chief Health Officer, but us working collaboratively with the Chief Health Officer and accessing these existing systems will be critical into the future.
Be fantastic. Tony, thank you for joining
us. Yes, and thanks for joining us. Sorry it was a bit late. Every Victorian can feel really proud. I know paramedics in other states. Victoria has the best ambulance service in Australia. So you guys can feel really proud.
Dr. Tony Walker is the CEO of Ambulance Vic. Tidings of the season to you.
Yes.
Thank you, and to you and all your listeners. Thanks very much.
Okay, bye-bye.
Thanks, Tony.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.